Welcome to After Hours, this very humid Sunday afternoon. One of the great events in Chicago, which I've been a part of for many, many years as a participant and just a book buyer, is the Newbery Book Fair, which takes place next weekend. And it's a great pleasure for me to have on the president and librarian of the Newbery, Daniel Green. Dan, how are you?
Good. How are you, Rick? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for breaking up your Sunday night to be with me for 45 minutes or so. But this is really an event worth celebrating. Let me first, Dan, ask you. You came back to the Newbery to become president and librarian in March of 2019. These have been a couple of rugged years for you, haven't they?
They have. Although we found a lot of new ways to engage with people online. You know, a lot of Newbery images and collections are available online. There's nothing like coming into the building to see an exhibition
to see the building too, Dan. It's one Absolutely. Of my favorite buildings in all of Chicago or the Midwest or the United States of America. It's just such a spectacular space. And you and I have talked about this before. In many ways, there are some people who think, oh my God, look at that incredible structure. I'm probably not allowed to go in there. That is far from the case, is it not?
You're absolutely right. We're free and open to the public. We've been free and open to the public since we were founded in 1887. And Rick, the building you're talking about, we've been in the same building since 1893. And, you know, everything we do online is accessible. And then anyone who is 14 years old and has curiosity can come on into the Newbery and take a look at our collections.
They can come in and look through the Herman Kogan papers, the Mike Royko papers, the Ben Heck papers. They can actually see the Oscar that Ben Heck won, the first Oscar for screenwriting. The challenges, you have met them, Dan, remarkably well. And I think part of that is you worked at the Newbery before going away to other endeavors. But your staff is such a wonderfully creative bunch, is it not?
It really is. Thanks for saying that. Our staff is, first of all, our librarians and everyone in our reference rooms and the first person you'll see at the Welcome Center when you walk in the lobby, they're all deeply committed to service. They're curious people themselves, so they want to know what you're interested in and help you on your research path while you're there. And then, yes, people who work on our public programming and our adult education seminars and our programs for teachers and our exhibitions are really remarkably creative people.
And you fit in perfectly, Dan, let me tell you that. One of your missions, I remember talking to you before, and it's always been one of my missions, and not affiliated with the Newbery, except as one of my many Chicago love affairs, is to do more outreach, to make people aware of all the Newbery has to offer. I know you work very energetically toward that end.
We do. I think people don't have a full, it's hard to have a full grasp of the breadth of our collection. So, you know, if you care about family history and genealogy, the Newbery is a place for you. If you care about Chicago history, if you care about the history of indigenous people across the Americas, we have one of the best map collections in the country. And then we have, centuries of human history across the Americas, across Europe can be explored at the Newbery. And we do, we really are committed, like a library should be, to that free and open access to materials.
Have you sensed in your nearly 3 years there so far that the outreach you've been doing a lot through the internet has been effective? Because I have run into people, Dan Green, who have said, literally said to me, "Hey, do you know about this Newbery Library?" I go, yeah, my father took me there when I was an infant. They've got a lot of cool stuff. I suppose that the internet, which I'm not particularly fond of, has been good for you. It's been, these last 2 years have given you new ways to grab that public attention, haven't it?
They have. I mean, in an obviously everything about the, or so many things about the pandemic have been unfortunate, but they've forced innovation for institutions right. like the Newberry. And so the interactive programs that we're doing, or the virtual programs that we're doing, you know, people can join us from anywhere, from their home desk or their couch. And now I think the challenge is, although the pandemic, of course, is not over, the challenge sure. is to rebalance, right?
Yep.
We do want people in the building, but we'll also continue to engage people virtually as often as we can.
Well, that's why the for a couple of years the great Newberry Book Fair had to take a pandemic hiatus and is back at full strength. What edition is this? Is this 34 years? I'm so confused. 34 years, 32 years, 36 year?
Are we allowed to? I don't know if we're allowed to count the past 2 years with the pandemic. But yeah, we go back to the mid 1980s with the book fair, and we're thrilled to bring it back after this.
Well, I think it's one of the great ways to introduce people to the Newberry. There's no better way to introduce people, Dan Green, president and librarian of the Newberry Library, to allow them to buy a book for $3. Not all books are $3, ladies and gentlemen, but you will find something there you like. There are more than 150,000 books in that neighborhood. And after a short commercial break, I will explore with Dan Green how much he loves the book fair and how the book fair itself has changed. It used to have a thing called the Bughouse Square Debates as sort of a centerpiece. And even though I hosted that for more than a decade, I think, the way it's changed is really, really wonderful and encouraging to me. So we'll be back with Daniel Green in a couple minutes. Welcome back. I'm on the phone with Daniel Green, who's the president and librarian of the Newberry Library. We're talking specifically about one of the great events in Chicago's history. It's been going on for more than three decades. It's the Newberry Book Fair, which takes place this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from roughly 10 in the morning until 6 at night. There are tens of thousands of books there. This is a very venerable thing. Is Dan Crawford still in charge of this, Danny?
You know, actually, we're now completely volunteer-run.
Wow.
With the book fair. So we have volunteers sitting in the basement sorting donations all year. And they wow. do fantastic work. They were out all day on Saturday, putting out books on the shelves. They'll be doing that up until we open on later in the week. So it's an incredible volunteer effort at this point.
Well, and Dan was an incredible guy. I mean, he ran the book fair for a number of years, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful erudite and unusual guy. I adored him. But I'm so glad it's all volunteer, and there is no admission to the public. The books are incredibly reasonably priced, and they're books, maps, CDs. What amazes me, Dan, and I know you're a reader and an academic of grand stature, doesn't it sometimes amaze you to think, well, when the book fair started, there were no iPads, there were no people reading on their telephone. I think it's an affirmation of people's ongoing and eternal affection for pages between covers. Can you talk about that for a second?
I think that's right. Yeah. And part of the wonderful thing about, I mean, the Newberry is a place for people who love books.
Yes.
And obviously in our collection, you can see, you know, centuries worth of books, but you know, you can also just grab a bunch of great books that you want to be carrying on the L or the bus during your commute during the book fair. There's always treasures to find there. And it is, I think you're right, Rick, it's an affirmation of the book as an object. And we care really deeply about that. And there's some history there. You'll find some vinyl at the book fair too.
Yes, exactly.
CDs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. The Bunkhouse Square Debate used to be kind of the centerpiece of the book fair weekend, and I hosted it for, God, in 2008. Studs Terkel hosted it before that. I took over when Studs died. And Arthur Weinberg before that. The Bunkhouse Square debates are no longer, and I think in talking to some of your staff, the reason for that is a very, very good one. Dan, can you address that? I think the whole notion was, you know, there's enough, everybody's arguing everywhere you look, on the internet and on television and on radio, and did we really need more of that? Basically, is that, were those part of the conversations you had when you decided not to do the debates?
It's a big part of it. First of all, I want to say thank you to you for hosting.
Oh, it was so much fun. Come on. It was so much fun.
They're wonderful. we're living in a time, I think, with a lot of screaming at each other and not much listening.
Yep.
You know, whether it's across the aisle, politically, or even across the aisle on a bus ride or something like that. So we've reinvented this event on Saturday afternoon that's now called Chicago Storytelling in mm-hmm. Bunkhouse Square. We're going to have poets. We're going to have moderated story circles where people can come together and tell their stories of Chicago. We're going to hear from authors. We're going to hear from young poets. We're going to hear from musicians. But it is participatory. People can come and be a part of these Chicago storytelling circles. And we'll focus a little bit more on telling great stories and listening to each other rather than disagreeing about issues.
Well, and one of the great things, Dan, just in you describing that, is you're likely to get some of the same lunatics that I'm familiar with from over the years who have things to say about the city of Chicago, which makes it a really joyful kind of event. You're also, and this is something that I think is very special, the Newberry Library is combining with the Pattis Family Foundation to give awards for books that, according to them, transform public understanding of Chicago, its history, and its people. I don't want to make it too simplistic, but Dan Green, did you get a call from the Pattis Foundation saying, hey, we have an idea for a book award. How'd you like to join us?
I mean, that is about how it started. Lisa Pattis is a member of the Newbery's board, and she and her husband, Mark Pattis, want to promote the Newbery, and they want to promote reading in Chicago about Chicago. And that's a wonderful thing that aligns with the Newbery mission. This is the first year. This is going to be an annual award. We got 47 nominations of books about Chicago history, people, and culture, and that's really reaffirming. And we're thrilled. We're going to be awarding, obviously, a prize winner and then four shortlist award winners. So five of those 47 books became prize winners this year.
And the great thing is, I know you've read them all. I also have read them all, which made me so proud. And the great thing is, Don Turner now was a former colleague of mine at the Chicago Tribune who has written it's a remarkable book, Three Girls from Bronzeville, Dan. I can rave about it, but would you rave for a couple minutes about that astonishing book?
Dawn Turner's book is just, it's a knockout, Rick. Three Girls from Bronzeville. She writes about growing up in Bronzeville and with her sister Kim and her best friend Deborah. And it's three women who took very different paths in life. And you really get deeply into the history of Dawn's own family. Yep. It's a really moving memoir, but it's also really situated in Bronzeville. She goes off to Urbana for college and comes back. And even as she writes, I can see her on that drive, you know, coming back in from Urbana to Bronzeville, the places throughout Chicago mm-hmm. that she describes. You really get a deep sense. You know, she lived in Lawless in that public housing mm-hmm. facility, and you really get a deep sense of public housing in Chicago as well.
Yeah, it is. You know, you can label it memoir, but it is so much. It is in part a memoir, but it is so much more than that. The other winners are Ellie Fishman's Refugee High, Coming of Age in America. The great Tim Samuelson's Louis Sullivan's Idea, Tim Samuelson, the former cultural czar for the city, William Seitz's Sunrise Chicago, Afrofuturism in the City, and a really another remarkable book, Carl Smith's Chicago's Great Fire. Didn't you love that book, Dan?
I did. Yeah. I did. And if you look at those five books together, I mean, if you wanted to say, hey, what should I read about Chicago this year? And you read those five books, you'll be everywhere from the 19th century to the present day. You'll be all over the city. And that was one of the things that was so wonderful about what the Pattis Family Foundation has decided to do here in allowing us to give more than one award and to recognize these shortlist award recipients.
I also think that on Saturday the authors will be there signing copies of the books that people can buy. I think that's also a fabulous thing to go up to Dawn, and there'll be a lot of people there who have read some of these books and will want to talk to them. And how did it work? Did you form a committee with the Pattis Foundation?
We did. We had a couple Newbery staff members on the committee. Liesl Olson, our director of Chicago Studies,
sure.
Laura McEnany, who runs our research and academic programs. And then we had the local novelist, Audrey Niffenegger, was on the committee. And Lee Bay from the Sun-Times, who's just been, you must know Lee well.
Well, I know Lee. He was a student. The one time I taught, Dan, I taught at Columbia College for one semester. And Lee was this young, bright, the only young, bright kid in the entire class, which drove me away from teaching. But also, I take pride every time I see Lee tweet something. He's a marvelous, marvelous writer and a great writer.
Absolutely.
And a great
Absolutely.
Writer, too.
And all of it, so the five of us read these books together. We got in a room in April and hashed it out and had a really good time talking about all of these nominees. It was there are many other books that could have been on that shortlist award.
Oh, no kidding. And I given the amount of the prizes received, Dawn gets $25,000, which is an incredibly substantial financial prize for literature. Not quite the Nobel Prize, but it is certainly up there. You're also on Saturday having all sorts of other entertainments at the on the main stage. People are going to share stories. I can't tell you how cool this sounds, Dan. And you must be thrilled.
We're really looking forward to it. You know, the other thing, Rick, that you'll love to know is there's an artist named Tim Yude who's going to be on site at the Newbery retyping. It's a performance artist retyping Nelson Algren's book, The Man with the Golden Arm. And Algren did research for that book at the Newbery. And this is a kind of performance where people can walk up to Tim Yude and talk to him about what he's doing in retyping this book. So that's just another celebration of a tough Chicago book, to be sure.
Oh, yes.
Another celebration of about reading in Chicago, about Chicago.
It is amazing. It takes place next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with the big event about Dawn Turner and her book and the other people in their book. That's on Saturday from 1 to roughly 6 o'clock. I'm going to keep Dan on for just sit there through the news because I want to talk to you also about some upcoming things. I think the Bughouse Square debates are not being replaced, and I think it's very, very wise of you, and it addresses the creativity on the part of the Newbery staff and you. It would have been very easy to just dump the debates and sell books, seriously. But you have refashioned this whole thing, and there's another event coming up in August that continues to sort of honor the bizarre but lovely tradition of Bughouse Square. So we'll talk to Dan after he sits through, and then you can do whatever you do on a Sunday, late Sunday afternoon. Dan, I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Rick.
We'll be back with him in a couple minutes. I have a few more minutes with Daniel Green, the president and librarian of Newbery Library. For all the information, all the many things we've been talking about so far, just go to newberry.org. That's newberry.org. It is one of the great institutions in the history of Chicago and is becoming even more vital. I mean, David Spadafora, the previous president librarian, did a great job of doing this, and Daniel Green is doing even he's expanding on. I know you were great friends with David, and so was I.
Yeah.
Dan, in August, you have another, you know, in honoring the somewhat sometimes lunatic activities that went on in the old Bughouse Square, from which I heard a ton from Studs Terkel and my dad, who both used to frequent that place. It's honoring that the history of that, first of all, Chicago's first park, Washington Square Park. In August, on August 27th, you're having something called Bughouse Square, A History in Song and Story. That sounds fantastic, Dan. Can you explain a bit about?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is going to be a family-friendly event outside on that Saturday afternoon, August 27th. We'll have food vendors and drinks and things like that, but we're going to be telling stories about Chicago, about the most memorable moments in Bughouse Square history. So, you know, Rick, stories about you hosting the soapboxes, and Arthur Weinberg, as you said, and Studs Terkel will be a part of this. This square, especially from the teens, 19-teens to about the 1960s, was really the center of free speech Chicago, and radicalism, you know, with the industrial workers of the world, right? Their archive is now at the Newbury, but if you were walking through that park during that 50-year period, you would have seen them out on soapboxes. And it was really, it was a center for radical free speech. And maintaining freedom of speech is something that we value deeply at the Newbury. So we want to celebrate the history of the park and bring people together to do that.
It's such a great idea. And using that park, which is your kind of front lawn, frankly, is just a great idea. They're probably, and you and your wonderful staff are probably thinking of other ways to use that park to spread the Newbury, not gospel, but spread the Newbury news, in a sense. Dan, what do you, when you have a moment there, when you're, you know, I know you're very, very busy. Is there anything, when you have a free moment, is there anything you noodle around in at the Newbury?
Myself as a researcher?
Yourself as a curious person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I am really interested in our Chicago journalism collection. So this is right in your wheelhouse, Rick, your father's own papers. But I am deeply interested in writing in Chicago from, you know, journalists, novelists. We want to continue to collect papers of journalists and other writers in Chicago. Our collection is active and growing. But, you know, I'm a historian myself, deeply interested in World War One, World War Two, and the era between it. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing a little digging in the newspaper, in the journalism papers from that era, especially to see how Chicago was responding to refugee crises at those times that were caused by the war. And you can really learn a lot from digging into those journalism collections.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I just did a six-part series for the Tribune about the 175th anniversary of that paper, and I had to do some digging myself. And it's remarkable. There are some wonderful discoveries. And frankly, there's some shameful discoveries, too, in the way that newspapers, which were then the main medium for communication, treated any subject of the times. It's fascinating. You're not writing a book, are you, Dan?
Not right now, but I think about this a lot, the relationship between journalism and history, right? Historians, of course, have the benefit of hindsight. Mm-hmm. Journalists have to write it as it's happening.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and one of the other incredible items that you have at the Newbury is the one of Mike Rako's cigarette butt-filled ashtrays, which is a rare item. I don't know if anybody could ever auction it off for anything. And you're planning, you know, I think you're still planning some kind of Rako celebration in a year or two, aren't you?
we're trying to figure out how to highlight that Royco collection. You're right. There are cigarette butts in that collection. You know, Rick, his Rolodex is just astounding.
Yeah. And Chris Borelli wrote about it. A lot of people have gone in to dig in Mike's Rolodex. I think my number's in there somewhere because we used to.
Oh, it is. We got to find a way that people can thumb through that Rolodex online.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Turn the cards.
Well, you guys are so, so smart and creative. You will figure that out. Daniel Green, thanks for sharing this. You'll be very, 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 very busy next weekend because the Newberry Library Book Fair takes place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it's a wonderful way to experience the Newberry Library. There are, I don't know if anybody's counted the number of books you have this year, Dan, have they? 200,000?
Tens of thousands, yes, but we haven't counted exactly.
Tens of thousands, and you can get some for only $3. Only $3. Dan, it's great to talk to you. I will see you over the weekend.
Yeah, Rick, thank you for everything you do for the Newberry. We really appreciate it.
I love it. I mean, I love it. My father would take me there when I was a little kid, and it was for me it was like incredibly boring because I'm 4 years old tied to a chair while he's researching the bathhouse John Coughlin, but then I grew up and learned to appreciate every single inch of that remarkable place. You got a great place to work, Dan, and you're doing the right thing by that amazing place. So take care of yourself and rest up for the weekend.
We will. Thanks, Rick. I look forward to seeing you soon.